Delighted to be your host again today. Are we in for a treat? You know we've made a commitment to bring you value. I've put forth a prayer. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives, so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Well, that's a big job, and each piece, each guest has something of value to contribute so that our lives are better and that we can have some joy in terms of the process. And we are involved in some intense times, very intense. And guess what? We have a wonderful guest today who is going to talk with us about the power of forgiveness. Anna has done some amazing, amazing work. Over 25 years, she has been studying a whole bunch of different things, leading her to develop this practice of hers. And she has done things on the roots of conflict, breath work. That started in the early 80s with her work of breath work, and she came out with her own technique called Breath of Life. And she got involved in raising a family of two children and back to school, did peace studies, got a bachelor's degree at the Union Institute, did dispute resolution studies, got a master's degree in that at Pepperdine Law School, studied questions of why human beings argue and why they result sometimes to violence and what we can do to create peace both internally and externally. And then in 96, she opened the Mount Shasta Mediation mediation services, which is so important because we need an alternative to litigation. The United States has set the example on the globe for the highest rate of people suing each other on the planet. It's like that was bringing us more joy or something. It was so popular. And we know that's not working, so God bless. Anna's here to help us today. In the 90s, she discovered the work of Colin Tipping and radical forgiveness. So you can be a radical and forgive at the same time. She's going to explain that later on. And so just so many things. She's developed her own style. She's done work with Course in Miracles. She's worked internationally in Singapore. She's worked in the prison system here, women's groups, schools, you name it. This is amazing. Get ready, folks. I know you've heard about forgiveness before. This is not the first time. But today with Anna, we're going to have some big fun and take this to the next level. So get ready. Welcome aboard, Anna.
Thank you so much, Ken. Boy, you reminded me about myself.
Well, good.
Yeah, and thank you very much for the prayer. That was beautiful. And I say a big amen to that one.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I'm just excited because of your diverse background, and with the intense times going on, we hear, okay, forgive, but help remind us, why is forgiveness so important?
Well, what I have found in spending, as you mentioned, you know, the background that I have, spending a lot of time in really examining the roots of conflict and why is there so much conflict, not only on the planet in general, but in our own lives, within our own relationships, and inside of our own heads, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's all connected. All that conflict is connected. So I've studied a lot of different ways of understanding that, but also, well, what do we do about it? What are some of the solutions to it? And so, as you mentioned, I have a background in peace studies, and then I went and got my master's and started to do a bunch of mediation. And that's great. What I realized then when I was mediating with people is that we didn't have very good communication skills because the people who would come and they would be in conflict and I would help them, but yet if they didn't have good communication skills, well then they would just go off and probably get into another conflict with someone else. So I had some background in that and had also lived with an experimental group of people back in the 80s where we did a lot of different communication kinds of experimenting. So I started teaching some of that. And then I came upon the forgiveness work and I realized that, you know, in answer to your question, I realized that forgiveness really goes to the root. It really goes to the knot of constriction that we often feel, be it on a national level or a personal level or anything in between, where it's a mechanism to come into peace. And the more that I have really delved into it for myself and receiving some guidance from within as to how to share that with other people, the more I realize that forgiveness is actually a key to creating peace globally and personally in such a way that I don't think we've even begun to explore it, really. So it's very virgin territory. And I like to talk about, well, what do I mean by forgiveness in the first place, too? So is it okay if I go into a little bit of that?
Yeah, because, I mean, people say, well, forgive, and the Bible says forgive, and we know forgiveness is a good thing, but it's like to clarify exactly, you know, what it is when you're talking about forgiveness and help us to be more clear about that, please.
Right, because there is a way that we can think about forgiveness and what does that word mean in a traditional sense. So probably a lot of the listeners out there, when I say that word, like you said, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. But we have really no map. We have no real way of knowing how to go about forgiving. And maybe we haven't even really taken a look at how much or how many instances forgiveness would really be a healing balm for. So usually when I start a workshop or I start the conversation, I really need to define the terms. And so I want to just describe the traditional way of looking at forgiveness in kind of a basic conversational level, what would we mean by that, and then to also describe how do I use that term, how does Colin Tipping, one of my mentors, use that term, and how is it used in one of the most powerful spiritual text I've ever studied, which is called A Course in Miracles. What does forgiveness mean in that kind of a way? So to start off, traditional forgiveness basically means, well, something terrible happened. It could be, and I call it a crime. So it could be a small crime, like someone didn't give me that parking space and took it and I wanted it, or someone gave me kind of a nasty look, or it could be a big crime, like a rape or a murder or an arson or, you know, something that really had a big impact like that. So in traditional forgiveness, there's a crime that occurred, something wrong happened, and immediately, in order to even start talking about forgiveness, we have to have that happen. Otherwise, what there would there be to forgive, right? So when we think about that, then immediately, as soon as we start forming that in our minds, then we have certain roles that go with that. So the roles are the victim, who the crime happened to, and the perpetrator, right?
Yeah.
So, and sometimes there's a savior, that person comes in and helps out, but for right now, it's simplest to just think about the victim and the perpetrator. So there are these two beings or sets of beings or groups of beings that have some kind of conflict between them. And sometimes this goes both ways. So it's easy to be in a situation, and it's very common to be in a situation where I feel like perhaps I'm the victim and so-and-so has perpetrated against me. But guess what? That person feels like he or she is the victim and I'm the perpetrator. So it can go back and forth. And so with forgiveness, traditional forgiveness, we think, well, okay, something awful happened. That person, usually we're in the victim situation, so that somebody did something terrible to me, but I am going to rise above the situation. I'm going to realize, oh, maybe that person had a terrible childhood, or maybe that person had some sort of addiction, or maybe that person was doing the best they could, and I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let bygones be bygones, and I'm going to release it. So that in itself is a beautiful thing, and the problem with it, though, is a lot of times we think we've released it, but we haven't really. And the second problem with it is that we don't really know how long it's going to take or whether it's complete or not. And in addition, it's just a sense of that the forgiveness still retains those victim and perpetrator roles. So we don't really get freedom or equality out of it. There's still a subtle sense of arrogance there. And I'm not saying at all that people don't do horrible things to each other, because we do. So in the sense of us being individual human beings on planet Earth, having what is sometimes called the world of humanity, there does need to be some justice. There needs to be, if people perpetrate horrible crimes, we need to do something about it. So I'm not at all suggesting, oh, well, let it go, don't worry about it, and that there's no kind of societal consequences that need to happen.
Okay.
So that's the traditional forgiveness framework.
Okay.
So was that clear? Do you have any questions about that before I move into the other framework?
Oh, well, one of the things that was coming up as you were talking was I was kind of imagining in my mind some sort of a scale or a spectrum of forgiveness for a particular situation so that we could calibrate for ourselves, because we might say, okay, well, I've forgiven them, and then to be able to go, okay, well, how are we going to really know
mm-hmm.
that we've got an expert here with us today, folks, that have we really completely forgiven someone? Is there still some part of it that's lingering? Are we 10% there, 50% there, 90% there?
Right, and with traditional forgiveness, we don't really know, because often what happens is we say, all right, that's it, I've forgiven that person, I will just let them off the hook, they had a terrible childhood, whatever that might be, trying to have some kind of compassion for the situation. But then what happens sometimes is that years will go by, and all of a sudden we'll realize, oh my gosh, here's all this anger, I didn't really forgive, I thought I did. But here it is again. So it's pretty difficult to know when it's over, because in traditional forgiveness, the framework of the victim and perpetrator is still existing. So we actually, even if we have prayed over it, until we learn, we move into a much bigger arena of spirituality, we won't really be able to find the truth behind whatever that was for us. One being the truth that we need to forgive for ourselves, not for the other person, right? So I need to make that clear, that the point of why we would forgive is for our spiritual journey. It's actually a spiritual path that we can be on if we so choose. So it's not like we're trying to fix anything or rearrange the circumstances. That may happen later, but energetically, what we're doing is we're saying, I want freedom from my own pain around whatever happened. So once we start doing that, if we get very sincere and we get some support in looking at forgiveness in a new and different way, that's where the radical forgiveness, sometimes I call it ecstatic forgiveness because it truly is.
Yeah.
It rearranges us so much, because if we really go deep, we will find that inside of whoever it was is the same identical, equal Christ consciousness that's inside of us. And there's no way around that. That's just simply the truth of what is. So in order to get there, we have to release all the pain and suffering and tension and anxiety that has been living inside of us because of whatever that story was, that the pain that was created between the two people, right? Or it could be just inside of our own head.
Yes. Now, in some situations, like when there's been some wrong done, some of the religions talk about the person being repentant for their misdeed, and then feeling sorrowful and remorse and making a commitment to improve themselves, and then doing some form of restitution so that the person who's been injured by their act of accidental or purposeful act has a way of being made whole again.
Mm-hmm.
And in what I'm hearing here is that you want us to be able to learn about how we can change the way we're interpreting something that happened to us in a way so that we may not have been made whole on the material world, but that we can do some important things to bring more love within ourselves for our own healing through this forgiveness. I don't know if I'm on target there.
Right. Right. And what you're bringing up is the difference between reconciliation and forgiveness, the difference between apology and forgiveness, right? If there may or may not be repentance on the part of the other person. We may get it. We may get an apology. We may not. So it brings up the question, are we going to wait until we get the apology or the restitution that we want before we forgive? And I would say that if we're waiting for that, we're in real trouble, because we could wait a long time. We could wait forever. Maybe the other person is waiting for us to do that. It could be a deadlock, you know?
Sure, and while we're waiting, holding ill feelings or some form of resentment or being in some form of pain, the spiritual teachers and the health practitioners that I talk to, any kind of negative feelings that we're holding are actually toxic to ourselves.
Yeah, and pardon me, I'm very interested in that. In fact, if any of the listeners want to, on my website, which is www.anahalub.com. That's A-N-A-H-O-L-U-B. That's B like brother. A-N-A-H-O-L-U-B.com. There is a free download, and it's the medical research on the healing benefits of forgiveness.
Oh,
and this is even
perfect.
Traditional forgiveness, not necessarily even radical forgiveness, which brings in a whole lot more grace and intuitive wisdom than just the traditional kind. But even the traditional kind is very healing. So I'd like to let you know about some of the things. This is from the Mayo Clinic, and there's more information on the website, too, about how many different healing studies have been done on the healing of cancer and other illnesses when forgiveness is involved. So it's very, very interesting on lots of levels. The researchers have found that forgiveness lowers blood pressure. It's helpful for stress reduction. It's good for lowering hostility and heart rate, lower risk of alcohol and substance abuse, fewer depression symptoms and anxiety symptoms. There's a reduction in chronic pain. Plus, there's great stuff that happens, like more friendships, healthier relationships, improved psychological well-being. And this one, for me, is the point of the matter, which is greater religious or spiritual well-being. So in addition to the spirituality that deepens within us when we really start to take forgiveness and this kind of ecstatic forgiveness seriously, and we really start to do the inner work that's required, we also get all these other goodies, which are great for our bodies and great for our emotions and great for our relationships as well, simply because we're just not holding on and feeling burdened by the pain of the past.
Mm. Ah, huge, huge. Yeah. So many people are talking about, okay, we've got this thing and we can use this spiritual clearing or some technique or another to get rid of the unwanted emotions or pain of the past, and that you're saying that the radical or the ecstatic forgiveness that you're talking about is that's the core essence of one of the benefits that you get.
Yeah, and I would like to say too that the work that I do in forgiveness really, and in general, I think the other people that are working in this field as well would probably agree with this, that one of the great benefits that we get is that in doing this work, we strengthen our own inner muscles because we absolutely just have to deal with ourselves. So nobody's going to do it for us. No one's going to remove the pain for us. No one's going to, fix it. Really, it's not about fixing anything. It's about unlayering the pain and the suffering that we have taken on, and just letting it drop and learning how to do that. And once we do that, all that's left is the glory of God that we are. So that in itself, that teaching of learning how to do that step by step, brings us so much more strength in our inner muscle. It's just like a workout, you know, with if you go to the gym and you work your physical muscles, this works your inner muscle. And that is irreplaceable.
Absolutely. Wow. Wow, okay. And I guess you're kind of touching on some of the benefits that we can get. As you said, that download will talk about, does it talk about physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual from the Mayo Clinic, or are those some of the things that you'll add in from your own work?
It gives some of what I just mentioned, you know, the lower blood pressure and the lower risk of substance abuse and those kinds of things. The rest of my website will tell you more about the spiritual benefits of it. It gets pretty darn simple. I'm a simple gal. I like practical, simple things. And one of the great, probably the biggest, one of the biggest benefits that I've received and that my clients receive from doing this work is that as we let go and we take the kinks out of our system, then there's a lot more room. So if you think in terms of a meridian system or even a blood system or even the individual cells and cell walls, that if research has found that the more tension we have, the more tension there is in the cell walls, so that we can't even receive the kind of nutrients we need cell to cell. And through the blood and through the meridian system of our energetic body, all of that starts to open up. There's a lot more room. There's room for more vitality, more life force, and a lot more room for us to start hearing our own intuitive wisdom. So the more people start doing their forgiveness work, this is why it's a spiritual path, the more we basically make a trade. Here, I'll let go of my pain, And what I get in return is an ability to tune in and know, okay, where do I go? What do I do? What is God's will? What's the best and the highest for me and all involved? Those kinds of questions start getting a lot easier to contact, and the answers come through a lot better because there isn't all this other stuff in the way.
Hmm. Wow. Wow. This is exciting. I'm hearing the phrase in my mind, accepting what is.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like there's something went on and it didn't go the way I wanted it to, and I'm not liking that.
Mm-hmm.
That tends to create some form of pain. But if I just, okay, that wasn't what I was hoping for, but it is what it is, and I accept it. And I guess in the forgiveness, we wouldn't just be accepting something that was hurtful or disappointing. We'd actually embrace it and in some way love it, if I'm understanding. Is that kind of how we know if we're getting to really forgiving it?
Well, I would say that an interim step before, and a lot of times we do our best to love it, but we still hate it, you know,
truth
be told. And so I'm really into being honest about this kind of stuff and saying, all right, so how, and this is a big part of the work that I do one-on-one with people when I do sessions, and I do work over the phone. It works incredibly well over the phone. It's amazing. And so the honesty and the openness and the willingness to say, all right, where is this pain? Where is this suffering? Where is this constriction, sadness, or fear, or whatever the, you know, the dark, denser energy is, stemming from whatever story it is about the past or what happened with a person or an event, where is this, and how can I do some emotional release, and that's what I do as a guide to support the release of the emotion first, because if we don't do that part, we just try to jump over it and say, yeah, well, I love it, and that's not really true.
We can say it, but we may not be feeling it, huh?
Yeah, and that's why if we just say a lot of affirmations over and over again, unless we do the emotional release work as well, it doesn't work, and we wonder why things are not showing up the way we want them to. And I'm realizing there's no guarantees anyway that things are going to show up the way I want them to in the world. My focus is more my communion with the one creator. So the more I am willing to release all the emotions that have been pent up and I've parked them, we all park this stuff in our physical bodies, and it can be found and it can be released, and it's actually not a hard thing to do, but it does take a lot of willingness and dedication.
Ah, okay. And so some of the things that you offer, you said there's the phone consulting.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you said individual. I don't know if that could also be for a couple or...
Yeah, I actually have worked with couples quite a bit, and then I also teach different classes and seminars, and some of them are for couples. It's a lot of fun to work with couples, actually. And I've had my ups and downs in life experience in being in a couple as well, so I have a lot of compassion for what happens inside of an intimate relationship, because we find the best and the worst in each other, and it can be really humbling, which is a great thing. So yeah, I teach recently the last bunch of workshops that I've been offering, and I've got another one in Grass Valley, California coming up soon on the 21st of March, are self-forgiveness workshops. And it's a full-day retreat, and I'll be doing 2 days pretty soon in the spring. And it's just incredibly powerful, because no matter what we have going on with somebody else, ultimately the forgiveness process brings us back to our forgiveness of ourselves. How did we respond to whatever that was that happened? And how did we respond to our own walking away, our own betrayal of our communion with our God? And all of the conflict really comes down to that. So going straight for it is just incredibly deep, and the healing that happens is is very ecstatic, and I'm so honored to be part of it.
Wow. Well, you've put forward a concept, if I just heard correctly, that you said all kinds of different things going on in the in our physical world, our earthly lives, can be traced back to some desire for a more complete connection to our spiritual nature, our God, our Creator. Did I hear that?
Yeah. So there's the deep desire to commune with our Creator, and then there's also the fact that we've walked away from that. Anybody with an ego, which is everybody that I know, you know, there are people that are really super clear, but they're very rare. You know, for the rest of us, and I include myself, we're just doing the best we can, opening slowly, and having sometimes really big experiences, but a lot of times subtle little ones. And so there's the deep desire to commune, and then there's also the grappling with and the forgiving of the many, many times. If you include past lives, then there's uncountable times when we've walked away from the ease and the grace and the divine love that's always available for us. So no matter what it looks like in our lives, I mean, circumstances are the variables, and we can get caught up in that, but more and more it gets simpler and simpler and simpler.
Wow. So when you're mentioning that, what comes to my mind is the story of the prodigal son.
Yes.
The one who's wandered away from a really good place and squandered a lot of time and energy and health and wealth and then kind of comes crawling back humbly and discovering that they are just totally incredibly well received and have been missed and it's thrilling to have a reunion and wow, talk about a nice story.
A homecoming.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, that story in itself is probably the best symbol that comes out of our Western heritage and spiritual heritage, Judeo-Christian heritage, that really describes what this walk is about. And ultimately, we are the prodigal son or prodigal daughter crawling back, bruised and humiliated, and yet wanting the divine connection so much. So that's the dedication that it takes, because we all know how to do this work. Every single being on the planet knows how to, although we have walked away, so we need some guidance as to how to turn around. And that's what I do.
Now, I'm just kind of curious other ways we can partake, because you've put a lot of time into some of the best things out there, the Course in Miracles, some of this radical forgiveness or this ecstatic forgiveness that we want to learn more about. And one-on-one or couples counseling on the phone or in your office in Mount Shasta, there's some trainings. I don't know if you're doing anything in terms of like other ways of delivering CDs, guided steps, meditations, different things, workbooks.
Well, right now I have, and this is available from my website, I have a CD, an audio CD. It's called The Healing Power of Forgiveness, and it has two guided meditations on it. And this is geared toward forgiving another person, although you can use it to forgive yourself. One of my projects in the near future will be to do another one for self-forgiveness. But anyway, it's very powerful and very simple and direct, just like how I'm talking to you right now on the CD, guiding you in two very powerful meditations. The first one kind of just helps you get your feet wet. It's the intro. And then the second one goes a lot deeper and will describe and help you walk the bridge of forgiveness. Really what it is it's a bridge. It takes us from the pain of our own fear and sadness and disappointment and betrayal or wherever else has gone on in our lives. It takes us from all of that over the bridge and to the love of the divine so that we can reconnect again and that we can hold all the beings that were part of whatever that story was, we can hold them in love and witness our equality together. I'm a big fan of equality. And not so much on the human level, because there's some things I know how to do that you don't, and there are lots of things you know how to do that I don't. So that's not the equality I'm talking about. I'm talking about the deepest level of equality, where we all come from our source, and we all have that flame within us, and it's eternal, and there's nothing we can do to move it or shake it. So really, this forgiveness bridge is about walking home to the truth of this and relaxing into it and finding the peace that's here. It's the best peace tool, the best spiritual path I've found, and the most practical as well.
Wow. This is important. I'm just kind of wondering, as we're thinking, we might call to mind, there's someone that may have hurt our feelings in some way, and we talked a little bit about, the other person, involved in kind of getting into understanding some of the traditional forgiveness versus the victim-perpetrator and the spiritual expanded forgiveness that you were talking about. If we've done something and hurt someone or just bumped into them, oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, and we're extending an apology. But a lot of things have gone on, and I don't know, do we have to have apologies before we forgive? Or?
Right, well, apology, and I definitely love to talk about this in my workshops because I do teach other things in addition to the forgiveness work, and some of it is communication skills, and I'm a mediator, and so there is a place for apology. Apology is great, and it is between two individual human beings on a world of humanity level, in other words, on an egoic level. So my ego loves to get an apology and likes to give one when it's time. But if I'm going to wait around to get one, like I said earlier, then it's going to interfere with my forgiveness work because the forgiveness work is a spiritual thing. Some people teach it without the spiritual component, but I don't understand how they can even begin to do it. Because to me, it's really all about our walk home. So
yeah.
We need to include all the levels of who we are, and if we leave the spiritual out, then we're just recycling. We're not really awakening.
Okay. Well, that's
So I wanted to mention, too, that I have another product available if you're more of a visual learner. I have a DVD that's also available from my website, and it's also got two parts to it, and it shows some of the things that I do in a workshop setting. So if you couldn't make it to one of my workshops, but you really wanted to understand and see visually what I do and how I explain all this in a much more extended fashion, then the DVD would be good for you. And it also has some guided meditations on it as well. I'm working on a book right now. I'm about almost halfway through it. It's really...
Hooray!
Yeah.
Halfway!
Yeah, thank you. I need to hear that. it's a big, it's the biggest thing, biggest creation in words I've ever tried to do. So I'm totally humbled by it. And what it is, it's a step-by-step explanation of how to go through the process. I'm calling it right now jumping into the river of love.
Oh.
That's what we do.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that hot.
And we all want to jump into the river of love, and a lot of us are kind of standing on the bank going, I want to jump, but I can't. I don't know how, or what do I do, or what's it going to cost me,
Yeah, what if it's frozen and I can't get in, or boiling
yeah.
and I'll get burned? Oh.
Yeah, so in the book I talk about how at one point, and this is on my blog if anybody wants to look at this little story. My blog is called Clear
Blog? Path. How do we get there?
It's called clearpathtopeace.com.
Okay.
And there's also a link from my homepage to get to it. But anyway, I was kayaking one time on the Klamath River, which is pretty close to my home in Northern California. And I was a little bit worried about getting tossed because I was going down some rapids, and they were pretty good size. And I thought, you know, I might, what they call in river language, go swimming. And sure enough, I took my focus off the river for just a split second. And before I could even think, I was in the river. And I had been pretty tense about it for some reason. I guess I just knew that today was the day I was going to go in, you know. And I was scared. So I didn't want to have to go through that. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't want to hurt myself, etc. It just was a scary proposition. And before I knew it, I was in the water. I was floating downstream. And that river took me with so much love, I started to cry. I was floating, just crying at how beautiful it was. It completely opened my heart. And all that fear and tension just left me. And that has become a symbol for me, and that's one of the reasons why my book is called Jumping into the River of Love, so that we can understand deeper and deeper and deeper that this life is a river of love. We've walked away from the direct experience of it, but we can turn around and come back.
Mm. Oh, boy, that is so, so needed.
Mm.
I mean, we're in a time where the planet has been massively abused.
Yeah.
The humanity has endured massive abuse for, I don't know, how many years. And I mean, there's, you know, 10,000 years would be a nice round number. That's a that's a big enough owie in most people's book. And then we're facing a global financial crisis and a time of possible the global warming and the what is it called, like a possible polar shift of a major alignment. I mean, all kinds of things are potentially happening at about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if there was ever a time for us to let go of our pain, now would be probably as good a time as any.
Yeah, because more and more all the tension and strife that will cause us and individuals to become more violent unless we turn around and go this opposite direction and say, wait a minute, I don't want to become violent. I don't want to go deeper into fear and a sense of I need to survive and screw everybody else, right? Because that is what happens when there's so much fear running the show. So when we, and I think this is happening, and I'm very, very happy to be with so many beautiful beings on Earth who are making this decision at the same time together, that we say, wait a minute, you know, we really know how to do that really well. We don't want to do that anymore. What's the other option? Well, the other option is to come back home to our divine connection and start making decisions from our intuitive wisdom. Now, how can we do that if the whole thing is kind of constricted and polluted from all this past pain? So that's why the bridge of forgiveness is so essential for us, individually and collectively.
Mm, yes, yeah, absolutely. Boy, perfect time, Anna, just perfect timing, and I'm so excited for your CD, the Healing Power Forgiveness, and we can get a DVD. It's available at Anna Holub, ANAHOLUB.com.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. We hadn't brought this up yet, but you've went to prison,
mm-hmm.
and I'm guessing it wasn't because of a lot of crimes, but to do some work. But I'm not sure. Why'd you end up in prison?
Well, this time around, in this lifetime, I'm free to come and go.
Okay.
But, you know, I have thought, well, maybe the people who are attracted to do this work inside of a prison have at some other time been behind bars. You know, it's very possible that I had that experience as well. So I'm open to that. But this time around, what I've been doing has been mostly in San Quentin prison. I have been to a few other prisons, and I'm also mentoring a woman in a women's prison right now. But the bulk of my work has been in San Quentin prison, which is a men's prison. So
yeah.
It's me and a room full of guys. And I'm not a big woman either. So it's a really interesting dynamic to be in there teaching and learning also from an incredible group of people.
Now, were you around at all when Stan Tukey Williams was there? He was on death row in San Quentin, and he had started, I believe it was the Crips, and was
yep.
on death row for many years, and ended up writing a whole bunch of children's books and helping a lot of kids avoid getting involved in gang warfare.
Yeah, what a fantastic example of someone who learned the hard way, made some grievous mistakes, and then used the power of his own divine love to turn that around and to start offering something of quality and of grace to humanity, even though he was stuck in a cell.
Yeah. And
I actually don't work in the death row area.
Yeah.
I am aware of him, though.
Oh, okay. And
yeah.
I think he was there for 23 years before
yeah.
he was executed.
Yeah. There was a big, one day when I was down there, there was a big rally to try to stay the execution.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been a major, major breakthrough in compassion. One of my friends, Reverend Michael Beckwith,
mm-hmm.
of the Agape Church.
Yeah, I know of him.
One of the things that he made mention, and I don't know if this is a support to your work, but he said statistically, if you look at states that still have capital punishment, they have more violent crime than states that don't have capital punishment.
Yeah, well, it links to how we view violence itself. And if we're thinking that more violence is going to help, then we're going to kill people. But if we realize, wait a minute, we have to stop this, as A Course in Miracles says, to walk off the battlefield. So if we walk off the battlefield, we say, all right, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a different way. How can we serve and support the essence of these people, which has gotten buried pretty deep in some of them?
Yeah, I think it would
How
be nice
support-
to have wars on a volunteer basis. So if you didn't feel like going and fighting, it was okay.
Yeah.
Because
well,
I
am connected with a wonderful group of people called the Insight Prison Project.
Oh, my gosh. And tell us about that.
They're doing very, very good work in San Quentin. And so when I do go there, because I live in Mount Shasta, it's about 4.5 hours away. I don't get down there on any kind of regular basis anymore. I was going about once a month for 6 years. And I was just there a couple weeks ago, actually, and reconnected with some of the men that I have gotten to know pretty well. And what I've done in there has been some of the forgiveness work, but mostly has been conflict resolution and teaching the guys some very simple yet elegant skills for lowering their anger threshold, helping them to learn also about the impact of gender conditioning on them. The male role belief system is what they learn a lot in that class, and many of them have been batterers, so they have the past of even killing their wives or girlfriends or certainly being violent to women. So me walking in there and showing them what is possible in terms of their connection, a conscious, respectful connection with a woman, not obviously in a intimate relationship, but in a soul kind of communion. That, and I also teach them about what women go through as far as the female role belief system and the conditioning that we receive from the moment we're born about, oh, you're in this kind of body, therefore you will be like this.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow,
it leads to violence if it's taken too seriously. And a lot of guys are sitting in prison because they got such a big dose, they took it on so strongly. I will be tough, don't mess with me. I will be the leader, I will be the big alpha male, and I will shoot you if you don't agree with me. And that brings you to prison. So that's some of the unlearning that we're doing in there.
Ah, geez, this is amazing. Are there any helpful tips? Because, one, we all want to stay out of prison, and two,
yeah.
It'd be nice if there's something that that you find is effective that you can kind of tantalize us with a few little goodies.
Sure. Well, one of the things that the guys in prison tell me is one of the most effective supportive tools that they learn. It's a breathing tool. I work a lot with breath, actually. And I'm a breath worker, and I really explored the power of the breath to help us to calm down and make better choices and reconnect with our spirit rather than going full on into something that we wish we hadn't later on, right?
Yeah.
So if we can just take a breath and slow down, learning how to breathe is a really great way. So, and I tell myself and the other people that are not in prison, hey, you know, if it works for these guys, because they're in overcrowded conditions with a lot of guys who are not interested in this work, right? So the guys in my class are a small percentage of the total, and they're living in very, very harsh conditions in the prison. And if it can help them, it can help any of us, right? And what it is called a relaxing breath. And all it is to focus. If you feel like you're getting tense or having anxiety or anger arise at any time, and so take some noticing. We have to notice that we're even going there, right? Be aware of ourselves. And then as soon as we notice that, just breathe out long and slow. Of course, we'll have to breathe in too. So we take a breath, but we want to be breathing out about twice as long as when we breathe in. And when we get anxious or angry, we notice that all of our focus goes up into our head, our neck, our jaw, and into our hands sometimes get really tense. So the minute we notice that, we just take a long, slow exhale, and we let all that tension drop down, 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 down.
You know something that I'm thinking on at the moment? I just got a couple of minutes that it maybe can be explored in another meeting. I'm thinking there's professional athletes that under the most intense pressure they're able to perform and do their job, whether it's like a Michael Jordan or different people in different sports that are absolutely amazing. And I'm just having to think something about perhaps the way they manage their breath or some of their thoughts, because to me, they're under pressure. They're doing so much better than all the rest of us, and that's what helps them stay at the top of their game. And I don't know if there's part of it isn't breath, because somewhere they're not all tense and messed up when they're doing their job. I mean, they got a tough shot to take or something, and they do it, and it's beautiful, but you know they can't be all conflicted inside to get it to happen. So
yeah, sometimes that's called being in the zone, right?
Yeah, so this breath is a key piece. So that's a bit off the subject, but it just kind of jumped in there when you were making mention of that. We've got about a minute left. If I want to invite you, if there was some last closing remarks to kind of share with our listeners, and be sure to give your website again. And
right. Well, my website is www.anaholub.com, A-N-A-H-O-L-U-B.com. So that's a B like boy, not a V, a B, H-O-L-U-B. And Yeah, I want to mention that I have some really wonderful free downloads from my website. If you would like to come visit, check out things that I have written and supportive things to help you right now today with if you feel like any of what I've said is intriguing to you. And also
yes.
that I do a free consultation, so feel free to call me and say, Anna, who are you? What's this about? How can I get more information? And then you decide whether you would like to work with me. So that's free. Just give me a call. And what else? I think that's about it.
Okay.
Just, I've really enjoyed the conversation, and thank you, Ken, very much for everything you're doing to support this awakening on our beautiful planet Earth.
My pleasure. Anna, thank you for your time. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. I invite you to make Saturdays, 4 p.m. Pacific, a regular time to tune into Advanced Living Radio. And be sure to go check out Anna's website. And until we meet again, thank you, and God bless, and goodbye for now.